You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses, iwoka.co.uk. Today we're in Orcières-Merlette.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are
in the middle of a disco by the sounds
of
things.
We're at Orcières-Merlette, which feels a little bit like the party at university that no one's turned up to, but the music is still blasting out of the front room a little, doesn't it?
You're still hurting about that, Lionel.
Well, I didn't go to university, Richard, actually, so it was a theoretical anecdote, that. No, I went to the School of Hard Knocks, as you know, Rich. The disco is playing out over the skate park, and the music is drifting across the whole of Orcières-Merlette, isn't it? And we're outside.
But literally nobody is standing in front of the stage.
No.
Where the DJ's doing stuff. So it feels a bit unnecessary.
I'm sure you can rush over later.
Well, we're going to ask Francois to go and tell him to turn it down a bit.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with COVID, mind you. You know, it's just that everybody's gone down the mountain already except us, I guess. So Orcières-Merlette were probably gearing up for a great party tonight on the Tour de France.
I think he's building up to introducing Bernard Thévenet as a legend of this mountain, of course.
Well, I guess the party was given in his honour, you know.
Well, that's why no one's turned up.
That's why nobody's turned up. Yeah, I have a scoop for you, dear listeners. Actually, I now know why nobody was asking questions to Bernard Thévenet yesterday about his win in Orcières-Merlette. For, as I said on Twitter to all my, you know, followers there, I don't know. I suppose you know that we tasted Bandol yesterday, and I told you the story that Bandol in the old days, there were mushrooms on in the Bandol crop, and that wine was giving you hallucinations. So obviously, under the influence of Bandol yesterday, I don't know what happened to my mind, because I've written and read lots of stories about Orcières-Merlette and Luis Ocaña, which I watch on TV, and Stephen Rooks, which I actually was there the day he won that time trial. But I don't know why all of a sudden that image of Bernard Thévenet in his Peugeot jersey, you know, riding solo up the climb to Orcières-Merlette came from nowhere. Probably
you must have dreamt it.
From a parallel universe or something. So for once, I must say, that was real bullshit.
Well, I mean, it's the first time you featured in Corrections Corner.
Well, he's sitting over there on his own in Corrections Corner, actually, literally in the corner.
I had a sleepless night last night because I said, when we were talking about Caleb Ewan and the supermarket queues, that he went through the six items or less till six items or fewer.
Yeah.
And I had a restless night as a result of that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I didn't have a restless night, because one of the advantages of old age on top of mental confusion is that you don't feel as ashamed. 20 years ago with, fake news like this one, I wouldn't have slept for a couple of days, out of shame. But, well, I slept well, so I suppose, I suppose, as I said, in parallel universe, I'm sure Bernard Thévenet won in Orcières-Merlette, but he didn't today, that's for sure.
Well, it's like the Tour de France itself. We have to make up for our mistakes as the race unfolds. We can't look back and regret what we've got wrong. We've just got to keep ploughing on towards Paris, haven't we, like the riders?
Every day is a new day, and today was an uphill finish. First one of this tour very early on. Cyril Guimard, the legendary French DS, former rider, dismissed this climb as insignificant, not very hard. Beautiful road surface. It's not the toughest, and it did come so early in the race that you sense the main riders were kind of, keeping their cards pretty close to their chest. But it was almost as if Jumbo-Visma couldn't help themselves. I mean, they've got three riders in absolutely incredible form: Wout van Aert, Sepp Kuss, and Primoz Roglic. And it almost looked as if they didn't really want to win, and they did by default, because in the end, Roglic was just the strongest rider there.
Yeah, and don't forget Robert Gesink, who was a leader in his own right, only 5 or 6 years ago, won, well, quite a few races, and now he's the road captain for Team Jumbo-Visma in many ways, and he was the one, you know, early in the climb who set the pace. He's obviously surrendered his role as a team leader. He's too old for that now. But you could tell at the end of the stage, I saw him pass, tried to talk to him. You could see the contented look on his face of, you know, duty well done. And all of them are impressive, and every one of them in their own role. And one of the most impressive of the lot is Wout van Aert.
Was indeed. Well, the other thing about the day that was notable, stage four from Sisteron to Orsier-Merlet, as you say, Richard, the first summit finish of the tour, was that there was a Slovenian 1-2 with Primoz Roglic winning the stage ahead of Tadej Pogacar. Wout van Aert was the climber of the day, wasn't he? I mean, we bumped into our Belgian colleague Hugo Kurevits. Francois, I think he said to you, finally, Belgium has a world-class climber. Yeah. And he showed it today. He was incredibly strong for much longer than I thought, which perhaps, you know, not the most difficult climb, I grant you, but it was still a very good turn from Van Aert. And when Van Aert pulled off the front, it kind of left a vacuum that Team Ineos Grenadiers really didn't want to fill. Michał Kwiatkowski sort of looked around to see what was what, and then Sepp Kuss of Jumbo-Visma came and did another, equally intense turn, and that set up the finish for Roglic. Pogacar looked good as well. Must mention Guillaume Martin, who was riding extremely well for Cofidis. He made the first real attempt to try and win the stage, and then when he was captured, went again and ended up third on the stage behind Roglic and Pogacar.
Before, well, Lionel, can I just interrupt you there? Because I was standing with 400 metres to go, and it was just at the spot where Martin launched one of his attacks, and I wanted, this is a strange tour, there aren't so many people there, but there was a sprinkling of people there on the climb, so I went and stood with them 400 metres to go just to get a good view of the race, and this is what it sounded like.
Well, before that, it was a fairly normal Tour de France stage, wasn't it? There was a break of six riders who went straight from the start. Niels Pollitt and Chris Nylens of the Israel startup Nation were in there. Mathieu Bergadeau of Total Direct Energy. Francois, how is the pronunciation on the surname there any good?
No, yeah, well, not great, but, you know, he's a young rider. He shouldn't have done it. I think he's one of the youngest riders in the Tour. It's his first Grand Tour, and he was called at the last minute, so it's kind of normal that you can't pronounce his name.
Well, give us how does one pronounce
Mathieu Bergadeau.
Bergadeau, okay. Alexis Villemoz of VMO. 82R was in there as well. Tish Benoot of Sunweb and Quentin Pacher of B&B Hotels. And, they got quite a way up the road, and it was really fairly formulaic until the latter stages. Tish Benoot crashed on a descent and was basically ruled out of the break, and then Nylens went away on his own and was eventually reeled in, and then, as I say, Wout van Aert put in his big turn. Roglic got the time bonus of 10 seconds, which meant that he's moved up the overall standings into third place. He's now only seven behind Julian Alaphilippe, who keeps the yellow jersey. The riders who lost a little bit of ground today, Emmanuel Buchmann and Enric Mas were 9 seconds behind the main group of favourites. Alejandro Valverde was 21 seconds down. Richard Carapaz was 28 seconds down. A little bit of a surprise there for Ineos Grenadiers, because, Richard, you were tipping him to feature in the shake-up for the stage win today, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I think also when we previewed the tour, we looked at the selection of Carapaz as being giving them options in the early part of the race. And in fact, I did an interview with Dave Brailsford last week. We heard a bit of it last night, and he said exactly that they were looking for a blend of Bernal, who we know will come good in the final week, and Carapaz, who's more explosive, he's fast, and I would have thought he'd have been up there on a stage like today. I'm not sure what the value would have been for them in him winning, but my impression, and it was confirmed by Brailsford, was that they were picking a team for the two halves of the race. Carapaz almost for the first half, Bernal for the second half. So I was surprised that Carapaz wasn't up there.
Danny Martinez and Sergio Higuita of EF Pro Cycling also lost a bit of time. They were in the Carapaz group at 28 seconds. Mark Hirschi, who had been second this morning, lost 38 seconds, so he slips down. And that group of GC riders at 17 seconds off the pace yesterday was around 30-odd, I think. That's roughly been cut in half. So we're starting to shape the GC picture a little bit. Peter Sagan is still in the green jersey, but Sam Bennett has drawn level on points thanks to the intermediate sprint points today. Pogacar is in the white jersey, having moved up himself overall. And Benoit Cosnefroy is still in the King
very,
of the Mountains
very
jersey.
Very good there. Well, Benoit Cosnefroy.
Well, we had somebody ask on Twitter how to pronounce his surname, whether the S is said or skipped over.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Last year, everybody was calling him Cosnefroy, and now everybody's calling him Cosnefroy, and I think it's from instructions from himself that it's, Cosnefroy, for reasons that the French speakers will understand, sounds a little bit odd, so Cosnefroy is much better.
It would sound very rude, I gather. Well, but I mean, I don't know I don't know the bad words. but yeah, James Bothamley was asking whether I've got the pronunciation right there. I mean, almost certainly not sometimes, but sometimes I get pretty close. But that's how we say it in Watford.
Not Watford.
I had a thought about that because you're mentioning Benoit Cosnefroy. If we stick to the snobbish way of pronouncing foreign names, you should never say AG2R La Mondiale because it's a French company, so you should call them AG2R La Mondiale, right?
Let's not go there, François. That's a thorny debate.
There's worms, can of worms all over the table now, François.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a small business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much to iWalker for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast and helping us as a small business to be here in Orsier-Merlet covering the Tour de France. It's been an incredible year for iWalker, helping lots of small businesses that have had their activity interrupted by coronavirus. And iWalker were accredited by the British Business Bank to grant coronavirus business interruption loans, CBILS, which is money basically to try and help small businesses stay on their feet during a very difficult period. I think small businesses have probably been disproportionately affected by coronavirus, and the money that's been made available by iWalker has helped them weather the storm and hopefully look forward to better days. iWalker also sponsor the Kendall Cycle Club, so hopefully all of the members are watching the Tour de France and enjoying it and listening to the Cycling Podcast, of course, up there in the Lake District. So thank you very much, iWalker.
There might be more people on the roadside in the Lake District right now than in some sections of the Tour, actually.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Just on that, I mean, we should be a little careful. We're not kind of downplaying, but the Tour de France is normally like the Olympic Games that moves around every day, thousands of people all over the place. And it's discombobulating that it's so quiet.
There's other little things as well. Somebody tweeted, Stan Meir tweeted, during the podcast, Richard said he wondered whether it feels like the Tour to viewers at home. Watching the past few days, it's felt like the light is all wrong. The shadows are Vuelta shadows, not Tour shadows. I thought that was a very interesting observation because that's one of the little things that's just kind of altered the texture of the race. You know, there's the atmosphere, there's the crowds, there's the scale of it. Some of it is very familiar. You know, we all walked through the zone technique today and it's the same incredible kind of setup, the cables, miles
yeah,
and miles of cables.
Fewer people. I talked to Philippe Sud on the phone as we were having lunch in Gap, which is a new thing as well. We kind of have time to have lunch, but like it seems to me a little bit like the Tour of the 80s. I'm unfortunately old enough to have been there in the 80s, and that's the way we covered the Tour in the old days. And Philippe Sud, so he's the head of communication for ASO, told me that the journalists and TV attendances here were 40% down on normal years. So you have fewer people even in the Zone Technique. And as we found out as well, and once again, it's not a judgment at all. That's just a state of fact. When we were driving up towards Sierra Merlet, well, the age. The average of the spectators on the roadside is pretty higher than usual because probably, kids are back at school, their parents are back at work. So, well, most of the guys and, we see on the roadside are probably pensioners.
It's a saga Tour de France, isn't it? Lionel, that was your suggestion.
Well, not in any sort of dismissive way. No. I mean, but it was striking, wasn't it, that it was a very different demographic out there on the roadside and a smaller crowd, but when it all comes down to it, it's still the Tour de France. The Tour is still the Tour, and when you see, I think that's the first one of the race, and we're 4 days in.
Well, it's like the Tour is not the Tour. That could be tried this Tour because there's so much about it that's unfamiliar.
But as far as the riders are concerned, the racing is completely unaffected, really. I mean, you look at the stage finish today, and you just see Jumbo-Visma, a team that are absolutely on it. I mean, that pretty much everything they did was right. Maybe, as I said in the tail of the attack, when Wout van Aert peeled off, Sepp Kuss wasn't on his wheel. He was just in front of Primoz Roglic. So was that a small mistake? Or, because Kuss then powered up to the front and then Roglic had to close the gap. I'm not suggesting that was any kind of problem for Roglic. He did it very easily, but ideally you'd want everybody in the line. But Ineos, although overall they looked like they were marching out of time today, they had a couple of riders in there kind of interrupting the Jumbo-Visma train. So this kind of battle for supremacy is going to be interesting.
If you look further down in the GC, I mean, you already have in the top 15 is probably going to be not far from what the final top 15 might be, with larger gaps, of course. But you have Nairo Quintana there, Thibaut Pinot is there, Julien Alaphilippe was fifth in the stage, so he's still there. Lopez, who crashed on the first day, is there as well. Egan Bernal, a little bit isolated maybe from previous years, but is there as well. So if you look at the top 10, maybe except Guillaume Martin, who might be the new the new kid in the block.
Well, we'll get on to him. I mean, on Bernal, he's running exactly the same as last year. The La Planche de Belfi, and in the Pyrenees last year, he looked like he didn't really have the legs. So I don't think we write Bernal off at all.
Oh no, I'm not writing him off. I'm saying in the leading group, except from Roglic, who won. I mean, they're all there. There were a little bit of doubts about Quintana being less strong than he was, but he's there in fourth place.
Today, on Roglic, Chris Baldwin, who you might remember, the press officer at Astana for several years, quite a quirky chap. He tweeted something, caught my eye, and made me chuckle. Everything about Roglic is terrific, except that giant forearm cross tattoo. It looks like something a serial killer would chop off and keep preserved in a formaldehyde jar over his bed while mismatched detectives Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman try to chase down leads.
Goodness me. Wow.
Interesting observation there from Chris Baldwin. But Roglic, I mean, as I said earlier, it looked to me like he was almost holding back and almost a reluctant stage winner in a way. In the end, it was, I might as well do this. That's what it looked like. And I think that...
I think he doesn't want the yellow jersey. I mean, he said in the press conference he was sorry not to, that it was only a stage win and not the yellow jersey. But, let's face it, I'm pretty sure it's the best possible outcome for Roglic and Jumbo-Visma. Alaphilippe keeps the jersey. Quick-Step will keep working. The French public or what's left of it will be happy, and he really went for the stage win, because if we doubted for a minute because of his crash at the Dauphiné that he was in his best shape here, he was the leading favorite. There were little hints of doubts, and I think that at least in this early bit of the Tour de France, Roglic is more than ever the number one favorite, undoubtedly.
And Slovenia are the number one nation at the moment because although Roglic might not be in yellow, he is the stage winner today. He's up to third. Tadej Pogacar was second on the stage today.
One and two is the first time on the tour for Slovenia.
And well, the two of them were on the podium in the Vuelta last year, weren't they? Of course, Roglic won the race, Pogacar won three stages. And earlier in the year, well, my last foreign trip before the Tour de France was a trip to Slovenia, primarily to interview Jane Brakovic for a Friends of the Podcast episode. But I kind of found out quite a lot about Slovenian cycling and just the sporting culture in Slovenia. And we all know Roglic is a ski jumper. You're a big...
What?
You're a big alpine sportsman, Francois. But Roglic, yeah, he was a ski jumper, Richard.
You're kidding me.
No. And then he had a terrible crash, and then he gave up ski jumping. Part of his recovery was cycling, and he became, you know, very good at cycling. And
wow,
initially, initially struggled to find a
team. You probably thought the ski jumper was a garment you put in when you go skiing, but it's not.
But in contrast, Pogacar really showed his talent very young. Richard, I think you talked on the podcast last year after a conversation with Andre Houtman, the Slovenian national coach and also part of the setup at UAE Team Emirates, that Pogacar was a child prodigy, really. He was riding junior races as a either a 12 or 13-year-old, a very young teen anyway, and he was riding with people much older than him. And Houtman went to watch one of these races and saw this little kid going round, you know, on his own, and thought, well, why not pull him out of the race? I mean, he's just getting demoralised here. And somebody pointed out that, no, he's not.
He's just about to lap
them. He's just about to lap the rest of the field, and the rest of the field are 2-3 years older.
He's good at cycling, isn't he, old Pog? He's looked really good. I mean, really on it every single stage, and sharp, and maybe so much with him, but with Roglic in particular, the one fear is the 3 weeks, you know. It's a long time to sustain that. I think we all think back to the Giro last year. Maybe that's a mistake, because I'm sure he learned a lot from that. But he's in such red-hot form, and you have got this threat of, you know, Bernal, what happened last year, where Bernal did just seem to get... Well, it wasn't that he got stronger. Everybody else got weaker, and Bernal was just the same. And that could well happen again. And, you know, Quintana's another one. He rode really well today. You know, that was a really strong performance from him. To beat Alaphilippe in a sprint at the top of a mountain like that, that's quite impressive. And also maybe quite telling about Alaphilippe as well, that, as I've said many times, I don't think he's quite the same rider that he was last year.
No. For Quintana, quite the opposite. I find that since he left Movistar, he kind of, even if he's in a weaker team, I talked to his team director, Yvon Le Danois, yesterday on the phone, who told me, well, actually, he feels that probably Quintana feels more at ease with Arkea Samsic, because he's the undisputed leader, whereas with Movistar, he always had to compose with either Valverde, Landa, or whoever was in the cards, you know, for Movistar at the time. So he said that really the merging, the kind of, you know, little magical alchemy they're trying to build with a French team and with three Colombians in there, it's taking, and in the same time, Quintana kind of extended his range, like, you know, like he did in the Vuelta already last season. Like now he attacks from afar, he sprints, he even attacks in flat stages. He seems to be more versatile rather than he used to be, and still, you know, a force to take into account in the mountains, obviously.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, reminding me to tell you that our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by the next generation Watt Bike Atom. Lionel, before the Tour, you put the new Watt Bike through its paces, or did it put you through your paces?
Well, a bit of both, really, Richard, I suppose. I'm not sure who came out on top, to be honest. I'm here to tell the tale, so, you know, I survived a few hard sessions, and I was keen to test out this new electromagnetic resistance system, which has been borrowed from the Atom X, which is the commercial model of Watt bike that you'd see in gyms. Now, by switching from a motor-driven magnetic system to the electromagnetic resistance system, it basically means there are fewer moving parts, which means that gear changes are quicker, and the ride is even smoother. By passing an electric current through coils to resist the movement of the flywheel, Well, that's basically how it works. I mean, to be honest, I'm this technology is beyond me, my simple brain. I don't really need to know how it works. I need to know if it works.
So I'm just warming down now, but I've been riding on one of the London courses on Zwift, and I've done a couple of different things just to, first of all, get used to the manual gear changes. I rode around one of the circuits, which has got a slight rise on it, so a couple of laps I'd go round in a small gear at a higher cadence, and then I'd switch it up and drop down the gears, make it feel a bit like I'm on the big ring, and powered up the climb instead. And after a few laps, it just becomes instinctive. You know when you're changing up, when you're changing down, and you're not really thinking about what it is you're doing. It just becomes automatic, just like changing gear on a bike when you're outdoors. You know, if you're coming into the bottom of the climb, you want to be in a lower gear. You don't want to have to change gear as the gradient is changing. And you feel that resistance change come on quite smoothly. So, it's a nice, realistic feel, just like riding a bike outdoors. And then I picked one of Zwift's training programs, which had a couple of intervals in it, and I let the ergo take over, which means that the resistance changes happen for me, and it reacts quickly, but not too quickly. The power comes on, or the resistance comes on smoothly, so you're not fumbling around trying to get into the right gear when what you're supposed to be doing is concentrating on increasing the power and holding that power for the interval. And the resistance just drops off nicely at the end of that particular interval, and you can get back into your recovery mode for a few minutes.
The next generation Watt Bike Atom is now available to buy from £90 per month. See wattbike.com, that's wattbike.com for details.
Well, Anna, I don't know if the music's being pumped up, is it? Unfortunately, we just missed... While we weren't recording there was a bit of James Brown, and I thought that would be a perfect opportunity for you to do your James Brown impression once again, which I think you've entertained the listeners with before.
I have. I think you'd have to go back and listen through the archive to find it. I'm not doing it again. It's very hit and miss, my James Brown impression. Sometimes it comes out really well, sometimes it doesn't. How did James Brown go through life like that? Only getting James Brown authentically correct on some occasions.
Difficult. Francois sitting there. I guarantee he'll have a James Brown story.
Absolutely.
His band opened for James Brown.
No.
In Geneva, in 1979.
No, I actually don't have. I actually don't have many James Brown stories. I've seen him a couple of times alive. I also see Bobby Bird, who was the guy who was actually arranging his stuff live a couple of times. But I don't have great James Brown stories. Unfortunately,
what does any of that have to do with Guillaume Martin? Who we were going to turn our attention to.
Nothing at all, I guess.
Because you spoke to his Cofidis team manager, Cedric Vasseur, at the finish, Francois. I mean, Guillaume Martin rode really well at the Dauphiné recently, and I think today was a real test of form, wasn't it? Just pure form. And Martin is obviously has carried that form into this race, and he looks great. And it was, good on him for having a go. But he's always been quite an aggressive rider, and he seems to be backing that up with, he's not just attacking, he can sustain it.
As you say, I talked to Cedric Vasseur, Cofidis team manager. Oddly enough, moving to Cofidis, which in the past was seen as the
graveyard.
Yeah, the wrongest move you could make, seems to have been... Really, change in his career. I mean, he's always been a very promising rider, very talented rider, but you had the impression he was kind of, dwindling around the top 20, 25 spots and unable to go, a little bit higher. And since the Dauphiné, but even all season, you can tell he's gone a step higher. That's what Cedric Vasseur is telling me, actually. But you can feel he's more confident. He's got more experience. He attacks at the right time, and also he dares attack Roglic and the Jumbo Vismas, and you can, well, probably maybe he was in a way the maybe the lost kid of French cycling would be too much, but he was always seen a little bit below Thibaut Pinot or Romain Bardet. By the look of what we've seen so far this season, what we've seen in this tour, is above Thibaut Pinot in the day stage, and he seems to me to be in better form and maybe to have at least as much potential as Romain Bardet on this tour.
Cedric, a great performance with by Guillaume. I mean, we could see he was in top shape since the start of the tour, but today really impressive.
Yeah, Guillaume, since several days, wanted to go on the attack, so we had to wait for the mountains. Today was an uphill finish, and in fact, it was not really steep enough for making differences, but we saw that in the last days, Guillaume was in a really good shape. And I think for the confidence, what he did today is really impressive. Of course, he didn't win the stage, but the tour is still long, and he showed again today that he's maybe one of the best riders in this Tour de France.
We saw that he's gone a step further from last year, for instance. He looks more confident, stronger. What changed?
Yeah, he looks stronger. He looks more quiet also, because in the past he was attacking at 7, 10Ks from the finish. We did a lot of work to help him to be more quiet in the race. We also put a lot of riders around him to protect him, that he could be very strong in the last uphill. And I think from what he showed now, all the teams will be behind Guillaume. He's our leader and our only leader for this Tour de France.
So it's now Guillaume against Slovenia?
I hope so. You know, the tour is still long. This is just a little mountain in this Tour de France, and the big mountains are coming. Mont Aiguille in 2 days. We will have the Pyrenees, we will have the Alps. But I have something like Guillaume is going to make a very great Tour de France. He showed in the last 2 years that he was in a constant progression, 2021 2 years ago, 12 last year. So now the focus is to win a stage, of course. And I'm sure Guillaume is able to come in the first 10 of this Tour de France.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off with the code SISCP25. At the checkout, that's at scienceandsport.com. You can, if you want to be a cycling podcast completist, you can be doing Zwift on your Watt bike while consuming your Science and Sport products, the Turbo Plus range designed for indoors, although it's also good in hot temperatures as well with the menthol.
While wearing your cycling podcast Katusha jersey.
I forgot that. We released episode 2 of Kilometer Zero today, sponsored by Zwift. A very striking slide, a picture of Pavel Sivakov after his crashes. He's one of 9 riders keeping audio diaries for us. He's been the most prolific in sending audio in. He's been fantastic. And I think at the end of this tour, we're going to have an incredible body of work from all these riders. We're not releasing it all at the moment, but we will at the end of the tour, and it will feature in Kilometer Zeros. But there was a great bit of product placement as well in the picture of Sivakov, because there was a Science of Sport gel hanging out of the back pocket. Not deliberate, accidental, but there you go. I know what you're thinking, Lionel. You're thinking, how many Science of Sport products did Richard use today on his 65-kilometre ride from Sisteron to Gap?
I was impressed by your ride this morning. What was it, 68 kilometres in the end?
65.
65 kilometres. Yeah, well done.
A fair old lick as well, I can tell you.
Yeah.
I felt like I could probably be riding the tour.
Well, to be honest, I was a little bit worried when you left this morning, Richard, because you couldn't find Col d'Aix on day one. So
yeah,
I was thinking you might end up in Briançon.
Different gap. It's another gap somewhere.
At a branch of the clothing store Gap somewhere in Avignon. Just we'd find you just huddled in a corner, covered in pastel jumpers. Anyway, just to go back to the previous discussion about Guillaume Martin, I mean, he's been the kind of form guy since lockdown eased and racing resumed. Third in the Dauphiné, mm-hmm. and third on Mont Ventoux in the one-day race. And his Tour de France progression has got a kind of nice symmetry to it. 23rd 3 years ago, 21st 2 years ago, and then 12th mm-hmm. last year, all for Wanty Groupe Gobert, of course. And now he's moved across to Cofidis. And, well, what would be a good result? I mean, cracking the top 10, as Vasseur
said. Yeah, I, you know, I think he can probably, on the form he's got, I think there are two things. He's on great form, but I also think he's gone up, you know, a step in the ladder. Is the change of team, obviously, you know, probably Guillaume Martin was not Groupe Gobert's number one priority. With Cofidis kind of beefing up its squad in the last couple of months, thanks to Vasseur and the new team, is getting there. And it seems to me that Romain Bardet, at least with AJ Tourist, is maybe declining a little bit. Warren Barguil is obviously had been declining since for the past 2 years, or maybe they'll be back to their best shape soon. But and Guillaume Martin is probably the guy in this French generation. He's a little bit younger, who's coming of age, and well, let's watch for him on this tour. He might be the big and the good surprise.
But there are guys here who are ostensibly here for stage wins. Adam Yates is another one, who's still up there overall, and that sort of deprives him of some opportunities. And I suppose Guillaume Martin, with the jump he's got, he could target stage wins, but he's less likely to win a stage when he's highly placed. Overall, as he is at the moment, he's up to fifth overall tonight. And Simon Geschke, one of our diarists, sent us in a dispatch tonight, didn't he? Talking about the unusual nature of this year's route with this mountaintop finish so early in the race.
Yeah, having a mountaintop finish so early in the tour changes the tactics a little bit. I think in the past, many teams and also many leaders were trying to hide themselves a little bit in the first week, not showing too much of their shape, maybe even riding themselves a bit into top shape still, which is hard to time perfectly. But the tour, or every grand tour with 3 weeks, it's a long time. And sometimes I feel not so great in the first week, but then in the second and third week, I get, by feeling better and better. And I think that's also what many leaders like. But having hard stages already in the first tour changes that a little bit. You cannot afford to lose any time ever as a GC contender. And today was a day to put the cards on the table, I would say. It also changes the way in terms of trying to understate things. For example, Roglic now, after his crash in Dauphiné, he said he will see if he's fit enough. They were doubting if he can start the tour at all. And now he won already the fourth stage. So I think that was also a bit playing by the team and by him. I think he was definitely good enough to start the tour in the first place. And now he showed that he recovered well enough from his crash.
Much as I hate to say it, Simon Geschke backs up something that you were saying earlier, Richard, about how Roglic was almost a reluctant winner. I mean, he obviously tried to win the stage once he was up there, but doesn't want to necessarily show all of his cards too early in the tour. But we were talking about this yesterday as well, about how last year we got to those Alpine stages which were curtailed by the hailstorms and the bad weather, and there was that overriding sense of missed opportunity for some of the GC riders. So with today's stage and Mont Aigoual on Thursday, there are little opportunities here. And I can't see Roglic, especially with the strength of Jumbo-Visma behind him, I can't see him turning down the opportunity to take the yellow jersey on Thursday if it presents itself, especially as Alaphilippe looks a little bit off in terms of the...
And he has such a strong team,
exactly.
Roglic. If you're going to have the yellow jersey, that was a problem Alaphilippe had today, didn't he? He had one teammate in the end, and he looks a little bit isolated.
This is the sort of climbs that suit Alaphilippe, So today he probably gave. Obviously, I'm saying this, and it'll be denied by facts, but it's probably probably the last mountain stages of this kind. I mean, that as Cyril Guimard said, it is, I think the first category it got from the organizers more from history and Bernard Thévenet. Oh, sorry about that. Luis Ocaña. Then to the real difficulty of the and this is a kind of very rolling climbs that Alaphilippe is very, you know, at ease with. I don't think he'll lose lots of time in Montaigual either. But then, you know, gradually, obviously, the real, you know, climbers and the real contenders will take over. And like it was last year, I think Alaphilippe was pretty clear in his first interviews about the fact that he's not again going for the GC. I mean, it's part of, you know, all the fancies we can have of Julian Alaphilippe being a GC contender, no, and pretty soon
the 2019 Alaphilippe would have won today, though, wouldn't he, from that group?
Oh yeah, sure he would have, and probably the same will soon apply to Wout van Aert. You can't hide the classics rider behind the temporary GC. For this kind of guys, it really depends on the form. I don't think it applies to Guillaume Martin, who in my opinion is in the next couple of years or next 3 or 4 years will be a GC contender. I mean, a top 10 GC contender, like, you know, like in the mold of Bauke Mollema or that type of rider.
Yeah, on this thing of who's going for the GC and who isn't, I never trust anyone who says they're going for stages until they've lost 5 minutes, because it's patently not true. You do see riders toss away an overall position.
Well, it takes enormous discipline. Simon Yates did it last year, quite
of
deliberately.
Course, yeah.
But it takes discipline, and he is one of these guys who is very single-minded, and I think it's very hard to, if you're in Adam Yates' position now, you know, up there overall,
yeah,
to let go.
No, so far Adam Yates, Adam, and like Simon, has done it the wrong way. I mean, in terms of going for stage wins, I mean, Warren Barguil did the same 2 years ago, you know, going for stage wins and for the polka dot. And if you want to do that, you have to lose to intentionally lose time early in the race.
Well, especially Mitchelton Scott, Adam Yates second overall at the moment, and without any fuss whatsoever, Esteban Chavez is eighth in that group of riders at 17 seconds, and there's already a bit of a shake-up and a sort-out on the overall, and some patterns are emerging. Obviously, the two Slovenians are in there, Roglic and Pogacar, and then there's four Colombians in the top 10 as well.
Today
Bernal, of course, Chavez, Quintana and Lopez.
Today was just basically a replay of the Slovenian National Road Race Championship, wasn't it?
It was. Now, a little bit of trivia from our Slovenian colleague, Tony Gruden. Do you remember when we talked about Slovenia back in the spring before the whole lockdown and everything, and Daniel said that the outline of the country looked like a, what was it he said? He said it looked like an east-facing pigeon. I put this to Tony Gruden, who works for the national broadcaster covering cycling, and he said that actually the Slovenians consider the outline of the country to be more like a chicken, and it's something that they're very proud of. And in fact, before Google, Slovenia's first internet search engine or portal into the World Wide Web, I guess their equivalent of Ask Jeeves, was called Mat Kurja, or Mother Hen.
This is extraordinary, Lionel.
What trivia this is.
You know? Huh? Knowledge you're,
so,
you're treating us to.
Will Pogacar and Roglic be counting their chickens?
Oh, I see. Yeah. You know, I see what you did. That's excellent. I don't think they'll count their chickens. No, I think Roglic is throttling back, and Pogacar is just, well, we don't know with him. We don't know, because at the Vuelta last year, you know, he got stronger as the race went on. And I don't think he knows his limits or his capabilities either. You know, we speak to Jeroen Swart a bit, who's this doctor, the head of medicine at UAE Team Emirates. And, you know, he thinks that anything is possible for Pogacar. And you know, he could be the guy here. He started this race without putting really a foot wrong, and has looked really, he's looked sharp, and he's been up there every day.
I think the problem, the strategy, the tactical problem for the rest of the tour, the only team that's actually, well, the tour of you know, yesteryears has most of the time been based on teamwork, you know, and the strongest team manages to get the strongest guy in the team, you know, to win the tour. The only team that seems in position to do that is Jumbo-Visma. It would take an exceptional individual talent to, you know, tackle the Jumbo-Visma and to beat them at their own game. Because even if Roglic had problems, okay, Dumoulin lost a little bit of time today, but he's still there. So, I don't know. I mean, if Pogacar wins the tour, or if Bernal wins the tour like he did last year, I can't think of anybody else, to be honest. These guys would be really, you know, extraordinary, because I'm not saying they would do it on their own. The team would do their work, you know, but they don't have a team to lead the way, control
true.
The race like Jumbo-Visma are doing. So we'll see.
Just to clarify, I mean, Dumoulin was in that group. He didn't. He was, you know, he was solidly in there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
that Roglic-Dumoulin tandem, it could be something that
really
becomes... Yeah,
he
really
was fairly downbeat at the finish, saying that he just didn't feel that he was at the level to compete at the front of that group. I think it was, everybody said it was really fast. You know, it was a really fast ascent of the climb. Helped, I think, by the smooth road, Wout van Aert.
Well, let's face it, it's not Tom Dumoulin's role. Even if it had been assigned by the team to do his part of the job, why should he?
Indeed. Well, tomorrow we start to sort of head west, don't we?
We go to Privas.
Tour de France.
Yeah, Privas, not Privas. In case
and you know, in a few days we're in the Pyrenees, aren't we?
Yeah, it's a very...
Skip and a jump and we'll be in the Pyrenees.
It's funny because we probably didn't realize in October when the tour route was announced that it was such a strange tour and such an awkward, you know, going kind of... You know, it's like snake and ladders in a way. You know, you're going up and down and up again, and
or like going around a U-bend in a toilet as well.
Oh goodness me!
But the other way,
yeah, defying gravity, coming back into the toilet bowl at the end. I mean,
it's kind of like that.
Which,
but anyway, tomorrow, what are we looking forward
yeah,
to?
Yeah, well, Privas has never been. There's been a tour stage in the past, but it was a start, I think. And there's never been a finish there. There's a funny thing about Privas. It's the only prefecture, capital of the department, in France without a railway station. So if you were planning to get and see the tour on train, but
was that your man?
Wow.
What was his
Dr.
name?
Beeching's already done his work there. So
but Monsieur
no,
Beeching.
No lead out trains for the sprint.
Yeah, I don't think there ever was a railway station in Privas, actually. So there you are.
What about trams? Do
you
have trams?
there was, I don't think, well, they might have had a tram. It's in Ardèche, it's the capital of Ardèche, actually. So, I mean, Tour de l'Ardèche, I mean, women's, you know, women cyclists know very well about Tour de l'Ardèche. I think Marianne Vos won a stage last year in Privas. And the last man, I think, well, there was a couple of races, but there was the Dauphiné won there a couple of times. And as far as I remember, I think in, 11 years ago, a promising rider won. Well, it was, even at the time, it's not promising anymore. But Alejandro Valverde won a stage there in Privas. So it might not be... lots of people say it might be a sprint finish, but if Valverde won in that place, it's quite hilly around Privas. So maybe more a stage for... maybe not Valverde, but I don't know, Julien Alaphilippe.
Not Sam Bennett.
I haven't seen, to be honest, I haven't seen the last stretch, but yeah, in the team, if they go for it, they'll probably try to set up Sam Bennett to win it.
Well, we'll see tomorrow, won't we, in Privas.
You mentioned Marianne Vos and women's cycling, and tomorrow's Kilometre Zero is a bit of La Course from Saturday and a bit of looking ahead to this week-long stage race that ASO are going to launch in 2022 to start on the final day of the Tour de France, which we'll hear in this episode from Lizzie Banks, who kept a sort of audio diary for us before and after La Course, and we'll hear from a couple of other riders as well, one of whom has rode the route of the Tour de France a month ahead of the men this time, not a day ahead as they normally do, the Donon Desel Ovelo, and they complete the course. So she had some interesting things to say about the course and the stages to look out for as well. So that's coming tomorrow, supported by Zwift. And we'll be coming to you tomorrow from Privas, tomorrow evening, and look forward to that.
Well, will there be a disco in Privas? Or maybe this has really taken off now and we can go and join in down
you're
the front.
You're dying to join it. I can see my dancing shoes on.
You're still a young man at heart, like the Pichun, you know, or in our press caravan.
We spoke to the Pichun today, and we'll be hearing from them in a future episode. We are supporting them through the sale of Stacey Snyder's cups and mugs, and the second batch is being made as we speak, and they will go on sale soon. We'll have details for you. We should wrap it up there and order dessert. Thank you, Lionel.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Merci.